Welcome, and thanks for listening to the Coach's Playbook Podcast. I sincerely hope we can use this platform to grow the game of basketball and have some fun doing it. This is the first ever episode of the podcast, and while I plan for this to be a resource for high school coaches, I hope anyone can listen in and be better for it. Our first guest on today's show is Coach Joey Thacker from Franklin County High School. Coach Thacker has been around the game for a long time and has been a fountain of knowledge for others as he shares the game so willingly with many. He has made multiple state finals appearances and seems to have a knack for winning the big games. Today we will learn how he effectively changes defenses to keep teams off balance, as well as get some insight into winning the big games on a regular basis. I hope you enjoy the first ever episode. Keep checking back as we'll have some great guests in the coming weeks, such as Coach Collins from Western Kentucky University, Coach Whitaker from Northern Kentucky University, Coach Dugan from Bellarmine, and many more. Today's guest is Coach Joey Thacker from Franklin County High School. He could teach us a lot in a variety of topics, but I've asked him to come on specifically to talk about and look at switching defenses. If you've ever played against one of Coach Thacker's teams, you know it is hard to get in a rhythm, but I think what separates him from other teams that switch it up is the method of the madness that's allowed him to win the big games consistently. Coach Thacker, thanks for joining the show.
Thanks, Coach. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, of course. Coming off another awesome year that ended with some hardware, it had to be sweet for you, especially with, you know, what I thought was maybe not the most talented or the deepest team you've had. That had to be really sweet for you.
Yeah, I was proud of them. I feel like, you know, really the last month of the season, we started to play a little bit better, and the right things that it takes to play basketball became more of a priority for us. You know, we got a little further than I think some people thought we would, and I was proud of how we competed.
That's good. And it's nice to hit that stride. You know, obviously it's nice to play your best at the end of the year because it means you have a chance or you are playing in the state tournament. But I think it also is huge for kind of building that momentum and that kind of hunger to stay consistent with what got you there, you know, in the summer and into next year.
Yeah, I think so. I think our kids, you know, you alluded to the fact we weren't as deep as we normally are, and I think that's probably a universal thing for most teams these days. But I feel like all of our kids that contributed a lot, they contributed a lot based on the roles we assigned early on, even, you know, last summer and in the preseason, because we had some kids that had to play out of position. We had some kids that had never had to play the four that normally play the two, but it's just kind of a workforce defensively. So those situations put us in a situation where that we were way better at understanding game situations because we weren't having to go back and teach certain things over and over and over because you have that continuity from the summertime on.
Right. What did you think about playing at Rupp? I think it's different. What did you think about it?
I think it's different. I think you get so zeroed in on your game, though, I always tell our kids that the ball nor the scoreboard knows when the game is played. But I do think it matters to the kids from a mental perspective. You know, going up there and watching last year, I didn't think I'd really like it. But as I watched the tournament and saw the crowds and stuff, I thought it was fitting to have it in Rupp Arena. This year, obviously, you know, you didn't really get to see a whole lot of the tournament, but I like it. From a geographical standpoint, it's really good for our kids. And I feel like for our people that are really true girls basketball people, you know, I think it's a reward that's been a long time coming.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely. It's Kentucky basketball is Kentucky, it's Kentucky basketball. It doesn't matter boys, girls, it means a lot. The kids, you know, put in the same amount of hours. They put in the same kind of work, and you know, even though the girls' game doesn't get the respect it probably deserves all the time, this is one little nod and a little tip of the cap for the girls that, like you said, I think is fitting. Kind of getting into what we really want to have you on for. You know, any style can win. We see that, you know, year in, year out with who kind of wins it all. But for you in particular, what has been your MO defensively over the last couple of years?
Well, I think it sort of morphed into the personnel that we had when we started getting really good in the early, you know, around 2010, 2012-ish time, because we had really long wings. So we felt like, you know, we could put in three or four defenses and mix it up quite a bit and use our length to bother people on the top of their offense. And, you know, our philosophy has always been anything we can do defensively that changes the angle of the offensive player's shoulders, and change them in a variety of ways, whether that be with your man stuff or your trap stuff or your zone stuff. It keeps people from getting comfortable. You know?
Sure. And I think for you guys in particular, you know, one of the things that probably maybe separates you from other people that switch it up a lot is it all looks the same. When playing against you guys, it's tough to get a beat. If you can't catch a call or hear something, then, you know, you may be setting yourself up, you know, to get caught in a trap, to get caught in some tough situations.
Yeah, it sort of looks like it's always 1-2-2. Hopefully that's what it looks like. That's what it's supposed to be. But, you know, there are certain things that we do to certain position number groups for the other team based on scouting report or based on if our kid's just a better defender than we think your kid is offensive player. And part of what we do is based on if we score the previous possession and where we score from the previous possession. And some of it's personnel based. You know, we have a package where we know if these five kids are in the game, we can only play these two things. And, you know, it just builds on itself. And when you have a lot of kids that play a long time for you, you know, you can build some stuff and not, like I said earlier, have to go back and reteach stuff. And that helps you add to your package.
So, okay, let me ask you this. Do you feel like, you know, I had a really good coach tell me one time, Coach Tim Riley, told me one time that you can be complicated on offense or you can be complicated on defense, but you can't be both. You know, with what you guys do, it seems like, you know, there's a lot of, okay, you have to have some cerebral players or that has to really be drilled into them. You know, do you agree with that sentiment? You know, or have you found that almost every kid that comes through is able to pick up on, you know, we're in this on a miss, this on a make, and, you know, these are our rotations and these are your numbers and all that kind of stuff?
Well, for us, you know, our situation's quite different than a lot of people in Kentucky. You know, our kids start learning that stuff when they're in fifth and sixth grade. And if we're lucky enough, you know, we have an elementary league that starts for girls, and they can play in that as early as fourth grade. That if we're lucky enough to get a coach that buys into what we're doing, doesn't always happen, but we've been really fortunate in most cases, that they can go ahead and start learning that terminology then. So I think that makes it easier as they get older, and I also think it makes it easier offensively because we don't have to talk about defensive terminology as much. So now we're pretty simple on offense, but I won't say that we've been simple a lot of years. We've just been simple lately because of the personnel that we have, you know.
Right. Also, how important, you know, I know for me, there's only so many things that I feel like I can focus on in a game and focus on and, you know, do well. How important are the assistant coaches, you know, as far as, you know, hey, this personnel group's in, or, you know, let's go with this kid and let's, you know, look at this. You know, I wish, you know, that one thing early on as a young coach, I wish I knew how to utilize my assistants better. It wasn't that I didn't want to, it was that I probably just didn't know how to utilize them that well.
Well, I'm a real big remind me of this situation when it happens guy. You know, we'll talk about that a lot in practice the day before. We'll talk about it a lot on the board and one thing that I figured out a few years ago was started been fortunate enough to coach in some of these all-star games. And these all-star games, a lot of coaches, they divvy up offense, defense, out-of-bounds stuff, you know, defensive out-of-bounds stuff, almost like a football staff. And we've sort of kind of started doing that lately. Not that I did it early in my career, but, you know, if we're getting ready to go over inbound stuff in practice, I may be totally hands off that day. And I have a better staff than I've ever had. But I feel like there are certain things that I've turned over to them to work on in practice, and I can just kind of oversee it. That as I've gotten a little bit older and may not have the juice that I once had, it becomes a lot easier. And I think the kids need to hear it from a different voice too. In game situations, I will say that you know, I handle most all of it defensively, but now offensively, I'm always open for suggestions.
Right. That's good. You know, I know we've talked before, and you mentioned that you chart the effectiveness of your different defenses, you know, since you're mixing it up. And how does that affect how you coach, you know, that game, especially maybe in the second half, but also maybe throughout the season? And do you ever come back to that?
Well, I really got the idea when I was younger. I worked a lot in the summertime for Tubby Smith at UK, just trying to make extra money and make connections. And Tubby's been really good to me over the years. And, you know, when he was at Kentucky, which he was all man-to-man, but the way they played their man-to-man was different based on a lot of things. And he played some 1-2-2 back in those days like we do. And he had a chart that he called a DER chart, defensive efficiency rating. And they chart basically, we're in this, so many possessions, this is how many points they scored, what does that lead to from a mathematical perspective on points per possession. And in a halftime, they would look at it. In the third quarter, they would look at it. And it's almost foolproof. And then I also heard Rick Majerus say one time, and I have a bunch of his DVDs back when he was at Utah, they have to solve it three times before we change it. And if they change it, you know, if we change it and they solve it three more times, we'll go right back to it, or, you know, depending on what we're doing. So between those two guys and kind of talking to Tubby about it some, you know, I think we just kind of evolved into, this is what we're going to run, these six or seven things defensively. We're going to look at it at certain times during the game and at halftime, in the third quarter. And if this is what the numbers tell us, this is what we're going to start the fourth quarter in, or vice versa. I would also say that I also was told one time that Syracuse is the only team since 1955 to ever win a national championship that didn't play man-to-man defense. That was with Carmelo Anthony in 2003. So in the fourth quarter, we're going to play more man than we've played all night if we haven't played a bunch of man by then. And the reason why is the numbers tell us we have to do that in the fourth quarter. So combining all that stuff into 22 years of trying to figure all this out, that's kind of how we play the way we play and why we do the things we do.
That's good stuff, Coach. You know, like I said, I think, you know, sometimes when I go against teams that want to mix it up a lot, you know, you kind of feel like they're either guessing, or, you know, you may feel like they go back to a defense that you're like, okay, well, we've had some success against this, good. You know, but I think when you're charting it, you know, sometimes you may feel good about, you know, you may feel good about the shots people took, but if they went in, you know, maybe you need to get away from it. But I think that's really good stuff. You know, not to have you kind of expose yourself, so to speak, but what do teams usually do that maybe give you problems with mixing up defenses, or, you know, what are some things you kind of hate to see, like when you're doing that?
Well, you know, it's really hard to play against four guards for us most of the time, and do the bulk of what we'd like to do defensively. And the reason why is, I mean, odds are there's somebody on the second level of the offense that can either put it on the floor or can make a corner three or both. And, you know, most of the time, depending on where they put that kid, you've got a kid closing out on her that's probably a five. And you get that, or you get situations where people overload you in what we would call formation-wise that you don't always see. And those two things can really wreak havoc on you. Now, the thing about it is we can invert what we do and put our small kids on the back line and our big kids on the top line. But when we do that, now we also give up straight line drive, you know, possibilities. So I would say those two things, you know, and the game's changed so much too that, you know, if you have four kids on the floor that can put it on the floor, you're going to be really, really successful in 2020. Whereas, you know, if you had four kids that could really shoot it in 2010, you could really be successful. So it evolves back and forth, but teams that are real versatile and really, really, really good at penetrating kick cause us issues because your eyes want to tend to go to the ball instead of your responsibility. That's just a teenage thing. So, you know, that's the problems we have.
Would you say you have the most success against teams that are kind of set based, you know, teams that like to kind of run something every time down the floor?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Our kids, the teams that we play, especially in our region, and we've got some really good coaches in our region, but our kids know their stuff. I mean, they know their stuff as good as their kids know their stuff because, you know, we spend the time teaching it to them. And then I can say, hey, we're going to steal this inbounds play that Henry Clay runs, and we're going to use it tomorrow night in the district championship game. And our kids will go, oh, you mean when that girl does this and that girl does that? And we're like, yep, yeah, okay, yeah, let's put that in. You know, and anybody that, you know, there's so many games that aren't won on set plays. We all know that. But anybody that does a lot of the same old, sets themselves up in a game in March where it slows down to not be successful because they're trying to make a play off something that somebody's seen on film for, you know, 2-3 months.
Right. You know, I think that's something that happens a lot at the collegiate level because the extensive level of scouting and film work, you know, where coaches kind of go back to that, hey, you know, this team ran this. And, you know, I think it helps you defensively as well. I think, you know, some of the really good defensive teams are really good when, you know, they've kind of gone, you know, in depth into their scouting stuff. And, you know, whether it be actions or sets or a specific offense, you know, you can kind of talk about your team, you know, even if you only have a day of prep, you know, but you've already played a game, you've had a day of prep for someone else who did something similar. I think that's huge. And I think that's an advantage that at the high school level, if you're doing it, I think you can give yourself a huge boost defensively if you're doing what you talked about there.
I agree. And I'll tell you something else that people forget is it helps your kids at the next level.
Bingo.
You know, when they get ready to go play at a college, it's not culture shock because they've been through the comprehensive scouting part of what it takes to be successful. So.
All right. So this is, you know, this is interesting. A lot of the questions that I ask on here are kind of for me. And, you know, I hope, you know, everybody else finds it interesting or can learn something. But when you're thinking about a season and you're going into it, I know that you've got some kind of fundamental truths that you'll stick with. But, you know, does one side of the ball get precedence of the other as far as offense or defense when you're thinking about, okay, you know, this is what we want to try to do defensively? And so, you know, I'm not so sure if your offense has to complement your defense. I don't know if, you know, I'm not so sure if it helps. But what's your philosophy on that, or do you even care?
I think for us, most of the time it is offensively because we're always searching for, depending on who we lose from the year prior, we're always searching for kids that fit the MO of can they do multiple things? And if they can't, do they shoot it well enough that they're not going to be a liability when the ball gets in their hands, you know. Defensively, I still think you got to guard gaps. I still think you got to guard, you know, ball screens. You got to box out. You've got to rotate to certain things. And they always have non-negotiables, no matter what you're doing defensively. But for us, I think it would be offensively more than defensively every year because it's just what it takes. And defenses don't change. you know, the must-haves are always the same to be successful defensively. And it's an effort thing.
Sure. Just kind of a side note, you know, I find myself wondering this a lot. Why do you think that ball screen offense has not hit the high school level at the rate it has the collegiate level?
I wonder that out loud a lot. I think that high school coaches don't spend the time. To me, it's almost like option football. If this happens, then this is your read. If that happens, then that's your read. And I don't know that high school coaches understand it as well as they should. The other part about that is, in most situations in high school, if you trap the ball screen and you rotate off of people, there's somebody you can afford to leave and go help on the dive or the roll or the pitch back or whatever. And I don't know that you can do that in the college game, you know, so there's probably somebody that you're guarding that night that you're really not guarding in high school. So that helps you defend stuff like that.
Sure.
In college, I don't know that you get an opportunity to do that without leaving somebody alone for a dunk or a wide open three or whatnot. So, and the other thing too is high school kids aren't as physical. And, you know, you're made to be more physical at the college level. And to have somebody that'll go out there and set a screen and set it the right way and then read it the right way is a maturity thing too. So I think it's a combination of all those things.
Sure. And I've wondered too is, you know, could it be a lot of us, we kind of, you know, we know what we know. You know, I think a lot of people run what they ran when they played. And, you know, high school basketball a decade ago was all motion offense. And as Calipari, I think in your state, a lot of times you see what the state college runs kind of hit home. And
oh, I agree.
When Kentucky started running dribble drive, I think it kind of changed to where, you know, you saw a lot of motion offense teams start running dribble drive. And, you know, it seems like there's a handful of teams still running motion, but a lot of it's, you know, dribble drive or motion. It seems like, you know, 90% of an offense that we go against are one of those two things. Do you think that has something to do with it, just kind of staying in your familiarity or comfort zone?
I do. I think people coach what they know. And I also will say that I think it's hard to find a post kid that can do both. And most of the time, girls coaches are just tickled to death if they've got somebody that can catch it on the block and turn around and make a drop step and score, let alone go screen and pop or go screen and dive or go screen and roll. So I think you add all that stuff up, you know, I don't know that these kids are learning to play and play the right way before a certain age anymore. And I think it's easier to adapt to what I would call the PE game than it is the basketball game from a coaching standpoint. So, you know, you're trying to fit what your players like instead of maybe what would be, you know, a real hindrance to the other team if you could really perfect it.
That's good stuff. All right. Hey, talk about winning big games. You know, I consider you one of the absolute best here. What goes into prep, you know, both mentally and physically, or do you kind of treat it like any other game? You know, just kind of elaborate.
I've always tried to take whoever we thought we would have to beat to win the region. And that's sort of how we dictate our practices all year. The things we work on, the things we talk about. And then even in our scheduling, if we play a not so great opponent on Friday night, we have 2 days prep. We're going to spend those 2 days prep working on whoever it is we think that we need to beat the region with. And I know that sounds like you're putting the cart in front of the horse, but I do that. You know, we spend an enormous amount of time playing teams out of our region, but we don't spend an enormous amount of time working on teams out of our region. And because you're never going to remember us beating, I don't know, somebody we play out of region, Bullet East as much as our kids are going to remember winning the region and going to the state tournament. Now, that doesn't mean we totally ignore the prep, but if we have multiple days, we spend multiple days on in-region opponent. And I just think that speeds up your preparation when you want to get your kids off their legs in February, March, when they have to play in the region. And our kids, I can go back and say, do you remember the day we worked on this? And they'll be like, yes. And then I also think it's really, really important that you talk to your kids in big games about 4-minute segments and what happens and why it happens that way. And most basketball games are the same. Okay, so in the first 4 minutes of the game, one or the other team is going to get somebody that picks up two fouls. One or the other team, okay, is going to get hounded by their coach because they don't block out and they give up multiple second chance opportunities. And then the other thing is, in the first 4 minutes of the game, somebody, okay, between the two teams is going to get points from their defense, points off turnover. So we always talk to our kids about, we don't want to foul to negate hustle, okay? We don't want to give up any second-chance points the first 4 minutes of the game, and we would like to steal the ball and score off of it the first 4 minutes of the game. And when you do that, and you do that over the course of four quarters, and you have different things that you talk to your kids about, they start to figure out what really, really matters in March. Because nobody's ever won the state tournament 85-84. It's not going to happen. So you start to train their brain. And in order to win big games, you have to train their brain before the game ever gets there, if that makes sense.
Sure. Kind of going back, you said, you know, when you're preparing for those you know, are you preparing them subconsciously? Like, okay, you know, if we're, you know, maybe we think we need to get ready for Scott County. Are you kind of saying, are you telling the kids, hey, you know, today we're going to start doing a little bit of Franklin County or Scott County and this, or are you just kind of going through their stuff and then you can draw back and say, hey, remember that day we worked on XYZ? Well, yeah, that was working, you know, that's preparing for Scott County.
No, I tell them.
Okay.
And we go ahead and give them typewritten stuff ahead of time. We go ahead and start teaching our younger kids how to run their stuff. And we just tell them. And, you know, not that it worked, but, you know, the year that we lost to Mercer County in the state finals, we played Mercer County regular season, which helped. But we worked on Mercer County 3 or 4 days before we ever even played the district tournament, just in case. Because there are three types of teams in Kentucky in girls basketball. They're the top tier teams who always play each other. There are the second tier teams who every now and then they beef their schedule up because they've got a pretty good class or a pretty good player and they play the top tier teams. And then there's the third tier teams who aren't very good traditionally and they always just play each other. They won't play the top two tiers at all. So you have three tiers of teams. So if you have a tier three team on your schedule, why not work on a tier one team? You know, so that's kind of how I've done it. And it hasn't bit us yet, but, you know, who knows?
All right. Well, that's good stuff. I could go on forever. Let's kind of get into our last segment here. This last little bit is going to be a full court press on you. All right. You only have about 15 seconds or less to answer the question. So you're going to have to not give me some mountain speak, and you're going to have to just get to it. All right.
Gotcha.
All right. What are your thoughts on holding the ball?
I get paid to win, so whatever it takes, it takes.
I love it. Does high school need a shot clock?
No.
Should they seed the state tournament? Go ahead.
No. No, I don't think we need a shot clock because I don't think we can find somebody to run the clock right now, let alone the shot clock. And, you know, I just think that the quality of basketball is not great, but I think it would get worse if it was too fast. In seeding the state tournament, I don't think it should be seeded because I think there are certain areas of the state that would never win a game in the state tournament if it were to be seeded.
Okay, fair enough.
Just my.
If you're up three with under 10 seconds, are you fouling?
Depends on where they're inbounding the ball.
Length of the court.
Probably not. I don't think, especially the other team, has anything that they could do. I don't think they've repped a lot of stuff full court wise to get a three. More now, if the ball is out in front of their bench, I may have to think about it a little harder. But no, I don't trust us not to foul a jump shooter enough to not foul. I guess is what I'm trying to say.
All right, and who do you hate to coach against the most?
Tim Mudd. And I'm glad that he's retired. He's my best friend in terms of, you know, everything that E-Town ever did. I go straight back that day and try to put it in. I just think what he accomplished and the things that he did over that period of time. He thinks like nobody else thinks, and I think the track record speaks for itself.
Awesome. Well, that's all the time we got, Coach. I really do appreciate you coming on and sharing your knowledge.
Okay, buddy. Thanks. I appreciate it.
See ya.
For Coach Thacker, I'm Coach Faust. I will talk to you again on the next Coach's Playbook. Please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, on iTunes, Spotify, or on the Anchor app and spread the word.